welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton, in for Shelley Delaney, and it's Celebration Grand Entrance Day, Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. On today's show, Amber Dawn Bearrobe will preview Friday night's Native Fashion Show. Michelle Martin will highlight her dance group and tell us her favorite place to watch the Grand Entrance. We'll hear more about how to run in the costume of your choice through the streets of downtown Juneau at midnight. We'll get an update on the Eagle Crest Cabin project, and Salmon Beyond Borders will update us on their work with transboundary water, including the Taku, Stikine, and Unuk Rivers. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juneau Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Unofficial results show Democrat Deborah Holland won Tuesday's primary election for New Mexico's 1st Congressional District. If elected in November, Holland from Laguna Pueblo would make history, becoming the first Native American woman to serve in Congress. She recognized the efforts of other Native women running for office, including Paulette Jordan, who's the Democratic nominee for governor of Idaho.
Maybe it's a year for Native women.
Her campaign priorities include health care, education, climate, and the environment.
Renewable energy, moving to 100% renewable energy, and having that economy create thousands of jobs, health care for every single New Mexican, and getting big money out of politics. I think all those things are issues that would benefit Indian country as well.
Holland says she wants to make sure tribal trust and treaty responsibilities are upheld. Tribal leaders across the country are raising concerns about Trump administration policies, such as Medicaid work requirements and the reorganization of the Interior Department.
I'll do everything I can to make sure that those voices are at the table, that their perspectives are considered when any policies that affect Indian tribes are put forth. But Indian tribes are the only group of people that are mentioned in our U.S. Constitution. We have a responsibility, and I will just do everything I can to make sure that their voices are heard.
Holland is vying for the seat being vacated by Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, who won the Democratic nomination in the state governor's race. The South Dakota Department of Health reports the state's first case of West Nile virus this season. The virus was found in a blood donor on the Rosebud Reservation. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The person is in the 30 to 39-year age range and had reportedly felt no symptoms before the virus was discovered in donated blood. South Dakota State Epidemiologist Dr. Josh Clayton says most people who are infected won't feel ill at all. But Clayton says those with symptoms will feel terrible for a while.
You're going to have fever, those body aches and headache, and you don't typically have the runny nose, the stuffy nose, the sore throat necessarily, but definitely feeling like something's pulling you down. In rare cases, we do have severe cases of West Nile virus those cases invade the brain and spinal cord.
Statistics from the Department of Health show South Dakota had 73 cases of West Nile last year, with about three dozen of those infected hospitalized. Four people died of the virus in 2017. Clayton says the number of cases for this year is difficult to project.
It's always an interesting case to see what we end up with. A lot of it will depend on our temperature throughout the summer, the precipitation that we get to allow mosquitoes to have breeding grounds, and then a little bit of it depends on how folks are doing with their prevention measures.
Clayton says becoming infected with West Nile virus is possible from mid-spring to the first hard freeze of winter that kills the carrier mosquitoes. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Organization awarded a group of Native youth Tuesday in Washington, D.C. Members of the International Indigenous Youth Council were honored for their environmental advocacy and preservation of water, including the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Native youth were recognized along with young people from the March for Our Lives movement and United We Dream, Color of Change. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth Conference, featuring leaders including Dr. Donald Warren in a contemplative historic journey to protect our lives and lands, September 12th through the 15th, Mystic Lake Casino. Earliest bird deadline is June 15th at bodyandearth.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And you are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host. And joining me now in the studio to talk about Friday night's Native fashion show is Amber Dawn Bearrobe and also Celeste Whirl. Goodness, cheese. Nice to see both of you. Nice to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Amber Dawn, will you please start by introducing yourself?
My name is Amber Dawn Bearrobe. I'm from Siksika Nation in just outside of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And my Blackfoot name is Many Butterfly Woman, Minestapanaki.
And Celeste, will you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Celeste Whirl, from Juneau, Alaska, originally living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Been working as a DJ for the past, 10 years. Tlingit name, Gukyadi.
Goodness, geez. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Amber Dawn, this is your third year doing a fashion show in Juneau, is that right?
Yes, this is my third fashion show that I've directed and produced for Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
And this will be on Friday night from 6 to 7 at Centennial Hall, right?
Yes.
If our listeners have not been to a fashion show before, will you tell them what to expect? What does it look like?
Well, I'll expect a lot of glamour, beautiful clothing and designs, indigenous fashion as art, and beautiful people. And this year, we have a couple of what I like to say star models, Kahara Hodges, as well as former Miss Alaska, Alyssa London. We'll have a variety of designers to look at, mostly and focusing on Northwest Coast designers, but we do have a few indigenous designers who are outside of that realm as well.
And Celeste, you'll be providing the music. What can we expect on that end?
Well, we'll see. We'll be hopefully inspire everybody and be full of some fun surprises. I love doing the music for the fashion shows and been working with Amber for how many years now?
This will be the fifth year, I think. The fifth year.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Amber Dunn, could you tell us maybe about one of the designers you've worked with before and what we might expect from them this year?
Well, a designer who I've worked with many times is Crystal Whirl, which is Celeste Whirl's niece. She also, I should note, has a store with her brother Rico Whirl called Trickster Company in downtown Juneau. And then a couple of newcomers that I'd like to mention is Megan O'Brien, who currently lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. She is a Chilkat Raven's Tail weaver. And she is just fresh off of doing the Toronto Indigenous Fashion Week. So I'm really excited to, this will be my first time working with her. And I'm glad to have her featured as well with the other designers at this year's Celebration Fashion Show.
And what's her name, Megan O'Brien?
Megan O'Brien. She is Haida and Kwakwa Kwakwa. And she's really a designer who is focuses on raven's tail and Chilkat weaving, historically really complicated, complex techniques. But she's made this transition from traditional historical weaving to fashion forward, to indigenous fashion now, which is fantastic and really exciting to see.
Celeste, you were air clapping when she mentioned Megan O'Brien's name. Are you a fan of her work?
Oh, I love her work, yes. You know, where she's taken, you know, the Chilkat blanket weaving, and she's brought that into the contemporary, you know, field. Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. And she, you know, also has some of her own music. So she produced, it's like some of the designers will have their own music produced, and so I get to learn from them.
And the great thing, if I may say is that I love working with Celeste, and between me and Celeste and the designers and the models, it's just a little, it kind of takes you away and you don't even feel like you're in Alaska, or you feel like you're in some other place for an hour of the day.
Yeah.
I was looking at your list of accomplishments, Amber Dawn, and it's very long, lots of graduate degrees, and one thing I thought was interesting, you've sort of maybe transcended from artist into the curatorial arts, I saw you say in an interview once.
Yes, my undergraduate degree, when I was a little baby of 17, I went to college, art college, but then that transition to working on the administrative side, and that transitioned into me being an art curator. And then when I moved to Santa Fe, that transitioned into organizing fashion shows. Started with the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, IAI. That was the first fashion show that I did in 2012, and I haven't looked back since. But it was an easy transition from art curator to fashion show producer.
And Celeste, how did you two meet?
Amber asked me to DJ for some of the first fashion shows during Indian Market. So it was exciting new adventure, you mm-hmm. know, to work with her and to be involved with such great creative processes and meet all the young and upcoming beautiful models and designers. It's so exciting to see.
And
it kind of blows your socks off.
I'd also like to say actor Gary Farmer is the one who
right.
originally
right.
introduced me and Celeste, because he wanted to do a project. So it was Gary Farmer who officially introduced
that's
us.
That's true.
And Celeste, tell us about your background in music.
Well, I've started out as an artist. I went to IIA and studied two-dimensional art, and I've always loved music. I wanted to be a musician and wanted to compose, wanted to be the first Tlingit composer. So in a way, like in my 40s and 50s, I came full circle and came back to that and used to make CDs for people, and they love my music. So I just kind of naturally and organically got into the process of creating music. And it's really exciting to be able to do these types of projects, you know, for our people and to inspire everybody. Music, you know, just it makes everybody come alive, as you know, being in a radio station.
And, you know, I'm thinking about this massive collaboration that you'll be doing on Friday night, in a sense, between designers, models, Celeste, with the music, you as director, and more. How do you get that to all come together?
Well, it's a controlled chaos.
Yeah. It's magic. It's fun. It's creativity. You work with all these different artists too, right, Amber? And
yeah.
Up to the gun, and somehow we pull it off.
And yeah, and it's always mm-hmm. it's a matter of being prepared for the unexpected, being on your toes, and dealing with a lot of creative people, and just you know, that's part of the show, part of the excitement, and it really kind of builds this drama anticipation, not only behind the backstage, but also in the front of stage.
Okay. I saw this quote in an interview of yours, Amber Dawn, in Cowboys and Indians magazine in July 13th, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You said, the wonderful thing is there are no rules, no such thing as, quote, traditional, end quote, art with a capital T. That is a concept made to control indigenous art and people. Culture, traditions, art, and fashion are always changing to reflect the individual, the surroundings, and the present time. Culture is living and breathing, not stagnant. That is the wonderful aspect about indigenous fashion, and I am pleased the new direction of SWAIA recognizes this.
Yes, people ask me, why Native fashion? Why Native fashion now? Well, Indigenous fashion has always been around. Indigenous fashion has always been innovative. And it's just now the surrounding population is finally paying attention, thank gosh. And it's just really exciting. And I do believe that, you know, culture is always changing, and it's always that's what makes a culture living and exciting, is that it is always changing. It's a living and breathing entity. And what I do like about the fashion show is that it kind of allows these designers to work outside of these constraints of what people think of as traditional art or traditional fashion. The fashion shows, in a way, you have just more acceptance of pushing those boundaries and edges on what being an Indigenous designer means.
If you were to give our listeners a tip on what to look for or listen, what's an advanced tip when they come on Friday besides beauty and art? What should they be looking for,
Just be, you know, open and excited. I think it's going to be a great project. You know, I love that SHI, Sea Alaska Heritage, is supporting these types of activities too. And
absolutely.
And originally, I believe when Sea Alaska Heritage, they came to Indian Market, they did a fashion show way back when, you know, like what, 2012 or I believe something like that. But I just think it's great that they have these types of venues for artists to be able to express themselves and that they support these kinds of projects. So shout out to SHI.
I agree. And just how small Juneau, Alaska is and just how big of an event that SHI puts on, I think is fantastic. I always enjoy working with SHI and, of course, Rosita World as well.
Well, I wish we had more time. I could talk to you all day about this.
All day about fashion.
6 to 7, Centennial Hall on Friday, the Native Fashion Show. We've been speaking with Amber Dawn Bearrobe and also Celeste Wuerl about that show. Thank you both so much. Is there anything we're missing, anything you'd like to add about the show?
No, just make sure to show up early and dress to impress. I always love it when people come to the fashion shows in their own creative fashion. It's just as fun to look at the crowd as it is to look at who's on stage.
All right, Celeste, I hope you approve. I chose If You Saw the Fire by Nick Golanin's project Indian Agent. So a new release from them.
Great, awesome. Thanks.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio is Michelle Martin, and she's going to be talking to us about her dance group and when they're going to be performing here at this year's celebration. Michelle, Gunashchish, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you.
Gunashchish.
Could you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
Kayak Jua Ayukhat Dua Sok Klinkik Anak Michelle Martin Yukhat Dua Sok Klinkik Anak. So my Klinkik name is Kayak Jua and my English name is Michelle Martin.
All right, and can you introduce us to your dance group as well, please?
Yes, our dance group's name is Hastu Itich Keich Tich Hasati, and that means That name means it is the seeds left in their remains, and our dance group is fairly new. So we started back in 2015, and we focus on the language, the Tlingit language, and really focusing the language with our children in our dance group.
And when you're not dancing, you work as a teacher at Harborview in the Tlingit Immersion Program, is that correct?
The Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program, for short, TCLL.
Okay.
Yeah, I teach 4th and 5th grade over there, and we're in celebration also.
All right. So thinking about your dance group, when would be the first time we could see you during this celebration?
Tonight, during the grand entrance, we're number 31, way back at the end of the line. And then, of course, tomorrow morning we'll be at Centennial Hall, and then Friday afternoon we'll be at Elizabeth Prodovich Hall.
Okay, but how many of you are there?
We have some that are from out of town that we like to FaceTime them in or call them in somehow, and they participate in practices. It's a lot of fun to do that. And so I'd probably say maybe over 50 to 80 dancers.
Wow, wow. And what is the age range of your dancers?
From prenatal on up. Yeah.
So thinking about, let's say, tonight, the grand entrance, you say you're number 31.
Mm-hmm.
So if the grand entrance starts at 6, about what time will that mean you enter, give or take?
There's about 41 or 43 groups, I believe. I'd say it'd take maybe a few hours, so it might take us a couple hours to get through.
All right. What should we look for as we watch you come in? What will you be thinking about as you enter?
I'll be thinking about who we're standing by, and I know there's a lot of great groups we're going to be standing next to, and if you see us, you'll see the children, because they do so awesome, the kiddos in our group. They sing so loud and proud, and they're really trained to step up and sing their loudest. It's fun to watch them. So I think it's the kiddos that are going to help us shine.
Let's see, you said you started in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired you? You've answered this to some degree so far, but what inspired you to start this?
Well, I work with Mary Filetti Dashjini, and she started it, and with Hune, Lance Twitchell, and there was some others also. I wasn't there right at the beginning, but Mary is our dance leader, and Mary isn't able to attend right now, and she's taking care of herself. And so when we, later earlier this year, we voted on having a president, vice president, secretary, so we had those roles to step in where needed to run fundraisers and so forth. And so it's a work in progress of becoming a nonprofit as well, so we can look into certain areas for funds and so forth. But when Mary couldn't do celebration, I had to step in as the vice president, I guess you could call her co-chair. I like to call it co-chair. And it's a big responsibility for me to step in. It's my first time, so I'm getting a lot of support from our dance group. And so when we started, it was Mary and Lance Twitchell and some others. And I probably came in later in 2015, and just started attending practice. I really liked it because they wanted to expand more on the language and learn more of what the histories of these songs are. So we learn a lot, not just singing and dancing, but we learn a lot about the language and what these songs mean and where it comes from and getting permission. And we really try to understand what the songs mean.
I think it's probably obvious, but can you just tell us why language is so important to you?
It's important because it's our ancestors' language. It's something I grew up hearing all my life. I grew up in Huna, and I heard it all the time, and I don't hear it as much anymore. And we don't have very many fluent speakers. We don't have very many elders, so doing things like this, our dance group with our kids, where they're actively listening and learning and moving and dancing and hearing the language, will help them to remember and learn it as well. So I just take so much pride in this dance group to bring our language alive and to be able to go to big big events like this at Celebration with other group members who are also passionate about the language, not just Tlingit, but Haida and Tsimshian too, to hear young leaders stepping forward and speaking now. And we're those next generation of leaders, and we're the young ones, and it's a huge step. I see so many of them, and it's uplifting, and to know that we're not alone, and bringing our languages back, keeping it alive, is so important. Otherwise, I can't imagine not having Tlingit language anymore.
Thinking about Celebration and this wonderful gathering of people, what is your favorite part about?
I think my favorite part is the grand entrance, because we get to see all the dance groups here. So many songs. There's so many fun parts that I like, but I really like the grand entrance. It's the excitement, the beginning, and to hear the lead song that we're entering in on. And this year it's the Shungu Katies, and we sing that song quite a bit that they're having us enter on. And I'm excited to see everybody again, just everybody from all over. It's nice to see family.
If somebody's never seen the grand entrance, how would you recommend they come down to watch? Where should they set up? What's the best way to do that?
All along this Willoughby Avenue, just bring a chair and just find a spot and have a seat. And there's that nice, I think one area that's really nice is the in front of the state building where the grass is there. Hopefully it's not wet, but lay a blanket and, you know, the people can sit and watch.
And that's 6 p.m. tonight, and they can see you as part of the grand entrance.
Yes.
Well, it's been so nice talking to you, Michelle. So you'll be part of the grand entrance tonight, and then remind us of your other performances, please.
Tonight, and we'll also have our performance tomorrow at Centennial Hall at 9:35 a.m. to 10:05, and then Friday at 7:15 p.m. at Elizabeth Pradovich Hall. And our dance group might be in the parade with another group, so it's just kind of a lot of our dancers are with other dance groups, and we'll see how it works. That's what I like about this, is we try to plan, and sometimes it just works another way, and we go with it.
Okay. Thank you again. Will you please remind us how to say your dance group's name in Tlingit?
Okay. Let me try this again. Hastu itich akeyachtich hasati.
And your name, please.
My name is Michelle Martin, and my Tlingit name is Kayakjua.
Gunashchish.
Gunashchish.
This young northern flicker is calling from the ground. Sound like trouble? Well, just because a young bird is on the ground doesn't necessarily mean it's sick or injured. At this time of year, juvenile northern flickers are leaving their nests. They fledge when they're 3 or 4 weeks old and almost as big as their parents, 11 or 12 inches long. Although you may picture a woodpecker high on a tree trunk, northern flickers, young and old, actually forage mostly on the ground. So this young flicker, just out of its nest, is poking around in the dirt and leaf litter, looking for ants and other insects. It makes test flights and, day by day, reaches higher and higher into the trees. But you'll still see it regularly, beak down in your lawn, probing for food. The best thing you can do for the young flicker, and other fledgling birds too, is to give the bird some space. And especially, keep your cats indoors. Next spring, this bird will probably be drumming on your roof, advertising for a mate. To learn what to do if you do find a sick or injured bird, visit our website, birdnote.org. We'll help you find your local wildlife rehabilitator. I'm Mary McCann.
The
The 34th annual Only Fools Run at Midnight is back on June 23rd.
Run for public radio!
Get your early bird tickets today. Why should you register now?
Early bird registration gets you the best ticket price, free custom design swag, and glow gear for running the race.
So don't wait. Get your tickets today at kto.org/foolsrun.
This event generously sponsored by Holland America Line and Princess Cruises, True North Federal Credit Union, and Rainforest Pediatric Care.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, June 6th, right at the bottom of the hour. In the studio with me now is Tana Peters. She's a development specialist here at KTOO Public Media and is helping organize Only Fools Run at Midnight, June 23rd, coming up in a couple of weeks, Tana.
Yeah, we are days away. It feels like days away.
If somebody's never ran at midnight with all of these fools, how would you explain it?
Oh, gosh, that's so exciting. Well, basically, you get to run through the streets and this year along the waterfront, too, in full costume through downtown Juneau like a, you know, foolish person might do. It's, like, so fun. You get to let all your inhibitions free and just run wild a little bit.
And proceeds go towards public media.
Public media, yeah. So this year, KTOO, we are the main folks who are running the event, which means that if you come down and run with us, then you also get to know that all your money goes to public radio, which is awesome.
So thank you. Yeah. All right. So June 23rd, we have a couple more weeks to sign up. Is this like, it sounds like wearing costumes, serious runners going out to have fun? Who should do this?
It's definitely a race for all runners, all levels. So there are serious runners. Not too shocking because Juno has like a very serious running pack. But also, it is not a timed race. So there's a big timer that you can see, but there's no professional like timing. You can't use it as a qualifier or whatever like that. So it's a fun run. All levels are invited. We have a short 1 mile version that you could walk if you wanted to. There's also, and then the 5K fun run is just, you know, wear your wacky costume. Nobody's worrying about how long it takes. But we are messaging, since we're starting at 11 p.m., the race starts at 11 p.m., so it's a little different this year. It starts at 11 p.m., and we're messaging, don't be the fool caught out after midnight. So,
so it's only fools run at 11 p.m.
It's only fools are running at midnight if they don't. I don't know.
And it's June 23rd. What day of the week is that?
It's a Saturday night, so the race has always historically been run on solstice. And so it's the closest Saturday to solstice.
What would you recommend for a costume this year?
Oh, man. We just did that spot that had fruit and monsters. I mean, I feel like there's some good, maybe a pun. I love a great pun. So public radio listeners, I think, also like puns.
And is there like a costume contest?
Yeah, there's a huge costume contest. So if you come, you show up for registration, then you can enter in the costume contest. There's a bunch of awesome prizes that we keep getting more and more each day. So like trips and flights and, you know, swag and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, if you enter, then at midnight after the race, there's an award ceremony. So you can get your cool stuff.
And it all goes to support public media here in Juneau. How can people learn more and sign up?
If you head over to ktoo.org/foolsrun, you can register there. You can register as an individual or with a team, and you'll be all set up.
Sounds good. Website once more, please.
ktoo.org/foolsrun.
And how much does it cost to participate?
It's varying levels. So we have a under 21 ticket and an over 21 ticket. And the over 21 ticket, I believe, is $25. Let me say that right now. And it includes a free Devil's Club Brewing Co. beverage in the price in the cheer garden. So that's pretty premium. And if you register now, we still have a few early bird tickets left, and that will also get you some free swag. So there's like a ton of stuff you can get. If you sign up now, there's a ton of stuff you can get.
And will you tell me something about a playlist as well?
Yes. So we are soliciting for folks to send me at tana@ktoo.org, TANNA@ktoo.org. If you send me a running song. We're creating a super sweet KXLL live running mix for everybody to run to. So please send me your favorite running mix songs. Do you have favorite, Scott?
Well, I picked one for after our interview. We'll see if you like it. I'm not sure if it's fast enough, though, for running.
I don't know. People run at different paces.
All right, the website once more?
KTOO.org/foolsrun.
And to contribute to the playlist?
Just email me at Tana@KTOO.org, TANNA@KTOO.org.
That's Tana Peters, Development Specialist here at KTOO Public Media. Join her and a ton of other people 11 p.m. on June 23rd for the only Fool's Run at midnight. Thanks, Tana.
Thank you.
Isn't he you want to talk to tonight? Everyone in town's got your number. Everybody's got you pegged right. Is that why you got in touch with me? I was even colder than I. Didn't bother you, I was crying. Now you wanna break my heart twice. Is that why you got in touch with me?
Fresh, high-quality local foods, and supporting your community, then you should check out the Salt and Soil Marketplace, Southeast Alaska's online farmers market connecting producers from all over Southeast Alaska to Juneau residents. You can choose from a wide range of goods grown and produced right in the community, all with the convenience of online shopping. The marketplace is open every week, Friday through Wednesday, then pick up your order on Thursdays from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. downtown or in Lemon Creek. Sign up, support your community, and eat local. Find out more at saltandsoilmarketplace.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, and it's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour here in the studio now to talk about the Eagle Crest Cabin Project. Is David Scanlon, the manager up at Eagle Crest, and also Reed Stoops, who is a board member on the Juno Community Foundation. We're going to talk about the project and a fundraiser coming up here on June 14th. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks so much for having us.
Who wants to just outline the scope of this project? What is it?
I guess I'll start. This is Reed Stoops from the Community Foundation. Last year, we got together a group of people to try to figure out priorities for the coming year in the areas of parks, recreation, and trails, which I'm working on. The ideas that were most popular were backcountry cabins and the Treadwell Ditch Trail, trying to get that finished. So those were the priorities we set, but we weren't really sure which cabin we would start with, and we knew that Eagle Crest had backcountry cabins on their wish list for a number of years, but hadn't yet had the wherewithal to put together a project. So we approached them and said, if we're able to put together a project, can we work with you to build it, and then we'll give it to you to turn it into a public use cabin and take it from there. So that's kind of how things started, and then I'll let Dave talk a little bit about how the plan evolved at Eagle Crest.
Yeah, and Dave, where's it going to be?
Yeah, so the location, we're actually really excited about it. It's going to be close to the bottom of the Black Bear Chair in the Upper Nordic Loop area. And it's actually going to be real close to the old historic Hilda Dam that started the Treadwell Ditch. And so the views are just amazing of Mount Ben Stewart and the high alpine meadows. And I think it really presents a great opportunity to tell the story with some interpretive signage of the old historic dam and the Treadwell Ditch and all the mining and everything that happened during that era. It's going to be in great proximity for a lot of daytime use for the Nordic skiers as well as some alpine skiers as well. So really enthused about the location.
And this is going to be a public use cabin that anybody can go online and rent.
You bet. So people will be able to go online, access through our website, and be able to reserve it for overnight stays. Then it'll be open for public use during the daytime for pass-through hikers, Nordic skiers, backcountry skiers that are hiking up towards Mount Troy. And so it's really going to be a multi-use facility that we think is going to just have a broad appeal all across the community.
So feasibly, you could go spend a day up on the hill and ski down to the cabin and stay there that night.
You got it.
All right. So how much to go from here to breaking ground, Reed?
Well, that's what we're working on right now. On the money side, we've got about half the money either raised or pledged so far for the project, between money that's come from the Juneau Community Foundation, from the Eagle Crest Foundation, from private donors, and we intend to supplement that at the fundraiser on June 14th, so we encourage everybody interested in the project to show up and see pictures of the cabin and help us figure out how we're going to fund the remainder of the project. We have a team of volunteers who've been helping us for about 6 months. We have a group of local architects who've contributed the design for the project. We have a number of builders in town. Dave Hanna from Alaska Concrete, who's said that he would help us build a little access road into the site. Triplet Construction, Tommy Doherty, who worked for Triplet, Chris Giannotti from P&D, Mark Pusage from R&M. We just have a number of skier volunteers who are helping to get the project going and hopefully contribute a good part of the labor for the project so we don't have to pay for it all.
And we're like sort of your traditional one-room kind of cabin, public use or more? What's it going to look like?
So the design of the cabin is I think, going to really stand apart from a lot of the other cabins. It's got a lot of artistic flair to it. It's got great windows, and it'll have an open seating area in the front of the cabin, and then it'll have its own little closed sleeping room. So we figure between the beds in the sleeping room and the outside space, you could comfortably see probably 8 to 10 people in the cabin. And it's got great design features to it. It's been an amazing collaborative to work with a handful of the local architects that just have a lot of passion, and we've come up with a really, really great design.
I'd kind of call it mining modern. It's not the traditional Forest Service cabin. It's not the traditional CBJ recreation cabin. It's a little bit unique and kind of fits in with the mining motif.
Reed, can you give us the details on the fundraiser on the 14th, where and when?
The fundraiser will be at Eagle Crest. It'll be 5:30 until 6:30 or 7 on June 14th. And we'll have a rendering of the plans, and Dave will talk a little bit about how it will be managed, and the volunteers that have been working on it will all be there, and we'll be glad to explain it to the public and ask for their help, because we need a little bit more money and some volunteer help to make this a reality.
Is there somewhere online where people can go to learn more or see the plans, or should they just plan on coming to this fundraiser?
Well, if they're not able to make it to the fundraiser, go to junocf.org, the Juno Community Foundation website, and there'll be some information on the Community Foundation website and instructions on how people can either volunteer or contribute money.
All right. We have been speaking with Dave Scanlon and Reed Stoops about the Eagle Crest Cabin Project. It's going up near the bottom of Black Bear. June 14th is the fundraiser, 5:30 to 6:30 up at Eagle Crest. And see them there. Or for more information, go to the Juno Community Foundation website. You guys, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks for inviting us. And we hope that our listeners will all help us get this great project done.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Tonight I'm alone without you, my dear. It seems I'm lonely for you still. All I have to do now is settle home and cry in our little cabin home on the hill. Oh, someone has taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just to listen to the rain in our little cabin home on the but in my heart that longing for you still. I'll just keep it there so I won't be alone in our little cabin home on the hill. Well, someone has taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just to listen to the rain in our little cabin home on the hill. Ah, when you have come to the end of the way and find there's no more happiness for you, just let your thoughts turn back once more, if you will, to our little cabin home on the hill. Oh, someone has taken you from me and left me here all alone. Just to listen to the rain.
Okay, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, June 6, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Here in the studio with me now is Erin Heist. She's the Outreach Coordinator for Salmon Beyond Borders. We're going to be talking about a salmon social and campaign update for Salmon Beyond Borders tomorrow at the Yacht Club at 6 p.m. Erin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here. So Salmon Beyond Borders, what are you guys all about?
So Salmon Beyond Borders, we're a coalition of sport fishermen, commercial fishermen, tribal and First Nation members, business owners, concerned citizens, who are really focused on the issue of the threat that mines on the Canadian side of the border, within the watersheds of these rivers that flow from Canada into the U.S., the threat that these mine pose to our salmon and basically our way of life that's based around those salmon. So right now in B.C., there's kind of a gold rush going on, and there are over a dozen different mines that are either proposed in development or actually in operation in these watersheds. And so, our campaign's really working to raise awareness about the issue, but then also do the work to talk to our different elected officials, both at the state level, within Alaska, within British Columbia, but then also going to D.C. and talking to folks at the federal level.
So tomorrow night, as your flyer says, it's a salmon social and campaign update, 6 o'clock at the Juneau Yacht Club. What you're going to probably highlight, again, your campaign. What are some of the things you'd like to communicate to our legislators or to these minds across the boundaries?
Well, what we'll be talking about tomorrow is about the engagement that we have had from our leaders. For instance, Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan have both been really big advocates for this issue. We also just had several state legislators who sent a letter to Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Mallott. And the governor, his administration is also really engaged. So we'll kind of give some more details about what all of that work looks like and where we're going. It's a complicated issue because we're talking about two different countries. Two different countries, but then also First Nations and Indigenous governments on both sides of the border. So we'll kind of dig into the details there. We'll also talk about how people can get involved both here at home and on sort of a bigger stage. And then the other piece of tomorrow is really just an opportunity for us to hang out with all of our salmon people. And we've got salmon donated from Alaska Glacier Seafoods, and Mark with COPA has done a salmon ice cream for us that he's donating. So it should be really fun. And we'll also have some guests who are in town for celebration, folks from Taku River Tlingit on the BC side of the border who are here, and also the filmmaker for Up Rivers is going to be at the event to talk about his film. So it should be really fun. You know, we'll do some campaign talk, but mostly it's just an opportunity for us to touch base with folks and give a little bit of a deep dive for people who want it, and more of just a fun time appreciating the bounty of our waters for folks who are into that.
Yeah, and I know you are a fisher, right?
Yeah, so, I am. I'm a salmon lover.
So I guess it's kind of obvious, but tell us why this is important to you.
Sure. Well, I grew up here in Southeast, and I grew up eating salmon, and it's just, I think it's one of the most delicious things in the world. It's one of the most nutritious things that you can put in your body. And on top of that, you know, our connection to salmon is really a connection to this place in a deep way that I think a lot of us don't really spend a lot of time thinking about. And I am not someone who's a member of an Indigenous group, but, you know, for those folks who are Indigenous to this land, like, it's an even more special connection. And I just think, you know, we have to do everything that we can to protect this gift that we've been given. And right now, with these mines in BC, there is zero benefit to Alaskans from any of these mines. And we have no protections. There's no financial protections in place. We just take all the risk. And we really can't afford to. So that's really kind of the heart of the whole thing.
And what are some of the things that we're seeing coming from these mines? Higher metals in the waters or?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the biggest potential threats. Really, the big scary one is the way that some of these mine wastes have been contained behind what are called tailings dams. And for instance, in 2014, there was a mine in BC, south of Alaska, the Mount Polly mine, whose tailings dam collapsed. And I think it was something like 6 billion gallons of toxic mine waste was released into that watershed. And their salmon aren't coming back. And we really just don't know what to do about it. There's not a lot of financial repercussions to that mine company. And that same company is now operating a mine with that same kind of storage facility in the Stikine watershed. And you think about the Stikine River and the Taku River and the Yunik River, those three rivers produce 80% of the king salmon produced in Southeast Alaska, which, you know, I think everybody is pretty aware that right now king salmon aren't coming back already, and we don't really know why. And, you know, we have some of the most beautiful king salmon rearing habitat in the world, And then to think that we were putting that habitat at risk from actions from a different country. You know, that's the really complicated part, is how do we make sure that our voices are heard on this side of the border and get our neighbors in BC to be the friendly neighbors that we know they want to be and help us kind of protect not only our resource, but a shared resource, because it's also a really important resource to those folks in BC.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the voice of Erin Heist. She's the outreach coordinator for Salmon Beyond Borders. Erin, can you give us a give us the details on tomorrow night's social?
Yeah, so 6 p.m. at the Yacht Club. Come by. It's a free event, although we'll have a donation bucket out. We've got salmon and all sorts of other really tasty sort of snacks for folks, as well as ice cream from Copa. And we'll probably be talking sometime around 6:45, 7, but for the most part, it's just a fun time to spend with folks who really love salmon and want to make sure we have salmon for eons to come.
And the Juneau Yacht Club, how would you describe how to get there?
I always forget which harbor is which, but if you go past, it's either Aurora or Harris, and it's that building that kind of juts out into the channel just past the high school.
Yeah, so take that left there. Yeah. I think it's Aurora.
Okay.
Yeah, over there.
Yeah, so go like you're going to go into Aurora Harbor and then go just drive around and you'll see it. It's the only building out there, and they've got a flagpole, and they have a really awesome deck, which, you know, it's probably going to be great tomorrow for weather. Fingers crossed. We've had really good luck the last couple of years. So ideally, we'll be grilling out on the deck and everybody will be just kind of chilling outside.
All right. If people want more information about Salmon Beyond Borders, where can they find that?
Probably Facebook would be the best. And we've got the event posted on Facebook. If folks want to RSVP on Facebook, that would also be awesome, so we can get a little bit of a head count. And so it's just Salmon Beyond Borders at Facebook.
All right, Erin Heist, thanks for coming on the show. She'll be at the Juneau Yacht Club and her colleagues tomorrow, 6 p.m. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. Tuning into a Juneau Afternoon. Laurie Scanlon will be your host tomorrow. We'll have more celebration-inspired interviews and stories. Colette Costa will tell us about the celebration-inspired films at the Goldtown Nick, and we'll hear about the Seal Trust 5K. It's currently 58 degrees here in the capital city and overcast. Tomorrow is a 30% chance of scattered showers, and the forecast for Friday calls for a 50% chance of scattered showers with highs around 52. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon.